This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSiN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
The NBA in March is not the same in the quarantine bubble in Orlando in the month of August. NBA handicapper Aaron Redding on Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard talk the Portland Trailblazers.
Quite honestly, guys, I have Portland, you know, from a ratings perspective, right with those, next level teams in the playoffs in the Western Conference. I have them right with Denver. I have them right with Dallas. Certainly Utah. I would have, right now, if Portland were to play Utah in an NBA, in a playoff series, I'd make Portland the favorite. This is a team that's certainly different than they were throughout the campaign. Remember, they've had some good playoff runs here with this team. I think it's, Lillard's been phenomenal. He's one of the most valuable players. The coach, Stotts, has basically said, we're not afraid to play him 44, 45 minutes, whatever it takes. I mean, how about the sign the other day when they were down by 20 against Boston? Tatum was just lighting him up. Lillard started guarding Tatum in the second half. He's like, and he's obviously not known for his defense. He did a pretty good job, but that's kind of the leader he is. Also with Portland, what's interesting is they get their full cast of characters back. A guy like Nurkic, who's looked really, really good. I'm surprised how well he has looked. It's interesting. He's actually a really close friend of Lillard. So you can see the chemistry has been right.
NBA handicapper Aaron Redding on the improved Portland Trailblazers in the quarantine bubble. They are 80-1 to win the title, 40-1 to take the Western Conference. NASCAR this week, a double dip Cup Series event at the Michigan International Speedway. Saturday, the Firekeepers Casino 400. Kevin Harvick, the 4-1 favorite to win that event. A three-time winner at the track in 28 tries. Denny Hamlin is 5-1. Ryan Blaney, Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano all 8-1. Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. 10-1. Chase Elliott and Eric Almirola are 14-1. Kurt Busch is 25-1. Friday, the Truck Series at Michigan, the Henry Ford Health System 200. Austin Hill, the plus 350 favorite. Austin Cedric, the plus 160 favorite to win the road course event in the Xfinity Series at Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin on Saturday. On the Edge with Jonathan Von Tobel, Point Spread Weekly contributor and VSiN host Wes Reynolds stopped by to discuss the Indianapolis Colts' chances this season.
There are some young guys on that defense, Bobby Okereke in the linebacker core. So you're going to have some young guys really take a step forward, as you were saying.
Total of nine. What would you say, over, under? Nine's a tough number. I think nine's the right
number. I think it's the right number. Yep. Gun to head, I'd lean to the over. But I think this is going to be, you're going to have three teams that are pretty equal, them, Houston and Tennessee. Jacksonville's obviously in a rebuild.
Feel more confident saying this is a playoff team because I would.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wes Reynolds on the Edge with Jonathan Von Tobel discussing the Indianapolis Colts. They finished 7-9 a year ago. Their over-under win total, 8.5, shaded to the over, minus 160. Playoff team, yes, the favorite, minus 146. The NHL's return to play postseason begins on Saturday, and VSiN has a 25-page hockey betting guide available for you right now. Sign up for VSiN's free daily email at vsin.com/free, and we'll send you the 2020 VSiN Hockey Betting Guide at no charge. That's vsin.com/free. With your action update, I'm Mike Sennett.
Get the latest VSiN odds at vsin.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
Check out the VSiN store for the latest and greatest in sports betting fashion. We have more than 40 shirt designs, including our most popular one. Cash in tickets is what it's all about. Then there's the latest addition to the VSiN store, the Bookmaker Blonde collection of shirts and hats. You'll find VSiN shirts and hats for any occasion, and they're all made to order, so you can find the right design, color, and size perfect just for you. Are you recovering from a bad beat? We have a shirt to make you look better than you feel. Burned by some late scoring? Maybe you should wear this shirt as a reminder. It's not under until it's over. And if you're a fan of a particular VSiN show, we have a shirt for you too. You'll find VSiN hats and even VSiN coffee mugs all in our online store. Just go to vsin.com/store and order now. That's vsin.com/store. Best of all, it's open 24/7, so you can shop whenever you feel like shopping. Just head to vsin.com/store. That's vsin.com/store.
This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, welcome in. 1 hour on tap as usual here on VSiN, and a great show as well. Bottom of the hour, a lot of hoops as we dive into the slate for later today. One game currently underway, Jazz and Spurs. That is the early game. Plenty of late action in the association. VSiN clip of the week, because it is Friday, too. We're going to talk a little bit about the Cleveland Browns. But first up, hockey. Andy McNeil, VSiN's hockey expert, author, of course, of the Hockey Betting Guide, which you should have already signed up for. VSiN.com/free. Check that out. All you got to do is sign up for an email. And guess what? 25 pages of information right in your inbox. You can take care of that and use that going forward for the postseason. These are qualifying rounds, though. Let's bring in Andy, though, who's nice enough to give us a couple minutes. We'll talk a little about hockey analytics and using them, because if you've been watching the show, you know that we've tried to use these a little bit more in terms of getting more accustomed to using hockey analytics with the hockey handicapping. So Andy's done a great job of helping us break this down. So Andy, first off, it is great to finally talk to you face-to-face. Thank you, and great job on the betting guide, man. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, thank you very much. The advertisement definitely sounds pretty big time when they have Mike Sinek read it.
Yeah. It's all about the powerful voice. The voice, if you have a nice enough voice, you can convince me to do almost anything, include yeah. buy a hockey guide that is actually worth the purchase. Let's see. All right, let's talk.
Well, you're saying it's worth the free price. Is that what you're saying?
No. It's worth the price. No. Should be spending money on that. It's actually, we're giving away the information. I like it. Oh, this has gotten off to a terrible start. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about this. And you know, you and I went back and forth a little bit last night on some topics that we were going to discuss. So let's start with one of the first ones that I threw at you. And obviously, you know, as I said, been using analytics a lot more, diving into certain websites. Natural Stat Trick has been one I've been really diving into and trying to get used to use. So from that perspective, let's talk about a series that wrapped up last night. So the Calgary Flames go on. They get rid of Winnipeg in four games. In the series, if you looked at some of the numbers coming out of Natural Stat Trick, right, we look at some of the ratings. And again, there's a lot of definitions for these. So if you pick up the Hockey Betting Guide, you'll have definitions and what these statistics means. But the Corsi 4 rating in this series, the Winnipeg Jets actually, despite the fact that they lost in four games, Andy, actually led the series in Corsi 4 percentage 52.73 to 47.27. Now, my question here is essentially going over some of these numbers and how I understand how that number works. It almost seems to me that Winnipeg was relatively unlucky with some of their shots and how they weren't going in. But how do you read that, where a team like Winnipeg leads in that category and yet ends up losing the way that they do in this series in four games?
Yeah, the Jets were probably unlucky at various points in the series. Obviously, injuries played a huge factor, and that's unlucky in and of itself when you lose two of your biggest stars early on in the first game. However, it's, you know, the Flames did play a pretty good series. Yesterday's second period was just a textbook second period. The Jets had no answer for them, but that's hockey, right? I mean, it's hard to punish a team you know, kind of knock them for their response when they're really hurting in the first place. And then you could say that Calgary was a bit fortunate to be up 2-0, I think, with that buzzer beater at the end of the first period. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you caught that, but you know, the Jets actually, I thought, played a really good period. I mean, they had the edge in Corsi 4. They weren't getting any high danger chances, but with that being said, Connor Hellebuck, who was the best goaltender in the league, let in two goals on three high danger chances in the first period. So it's, you know, that's pretty uncharacteristic of him as well. And he never had a good game in the series. Heading in, goaltending is supposed to be the one area that the Winnipeg Jets have a decisive advantage in. And he just didn't pick it up. And as far as, you know, how to view stats like the Jets having a Corsi 4 advantage in this series, or Corsi 4 percentage advantage, sorry. You know, anything can happen over a small sample. Like, yep. We would expect the Jets to continue to, you know, continue to outshoot the Flames if they were to keep playing that way, and maybe the goals would start to come. But, you know, it, in a small sample, it doesn't matter. You might outshoot your opponent, but the goals are random and they can come in any way. And it's really up to variance at that point.
So let's talk. That's a series that's concluded. Let's talk about a series that is still underway. We're going to get another game tonight, Chicago-Edmonton. Edmonton right now, slight favorite over at the Westgate, $1.22. You're getting plus 112 back on the other side, 6.5, and it's a pick. But Edmonton also leads this series in Corsi 4 at this point, but it's really slight, 51.69 to 48.3. So when you're looking at something like that, what other factors in terms of the statistics analytics can you use to find an edge one way or the other for either one of these teams coming into a game like tonight?
Well, I think from my perspective coming into tonight, I look at it like this. I've done the work. I put in a ton of research, and I built my projections. I refined my numbers leading up to this return to play format. And over the course of four games, I'm not going to change a thing unless something has happened, due to an injured player or whatnot, or a goaltending change. I'm going to trust my numbers. If this were a regular season and I had prepared, throughout the month of August, like towards the end of the offseason, I'm getting ready to get going, I'd be looking for 20 games of before I start buying what these teams are selling. And this season here is a season in and of itself. These guys have been off for 5 months. That's, twice as long as a typical offseason would be. So, I'm going in blind, kind of. I'm not going to overreact to a few games. My projection for the Blackhawks has not changed. My projection for the Oilers has not changed. And that's the case in all of these series. And I think the market really reflects that, too. Yeah. These prices, these markets, the series markets, even the game one markets, they were bet into a lot more than the typical hockey market that comes up the day of or the night before. These were up for weeks. And so we have really refined prices here. And I think if you look at on a game-to-game basis, the prices haven't really changed. I mean, the Blackhawks have been, they started as a plus 130, plus 125 underdog, and it's kind of come down. But, I mean, the last few games, we've seen the price really stick at that plus 115 range. So, if you were seeing value in the Blackhawks at plus 120, and now they're plus 115, plus 110, the series is kind of over for you as a bettor, unless, I don't think you're going to jump over to the Oilers side. It's kind of, you're just going to ride out the rest of the series and then look for the next round to start to find some new edges, because these markets have kind of been bet into shape, so to speak.
So just maybe a general question then, because what stuck out to me about this series were the high danger chance numbers at even strength. Edmonton seems to have a pretty good edge, 30-19 generated for Edmonton. So like in a general sense, when you see a team that's leading both in Corsi 4 and high danger chances are generating more, does that indicate a team that should probably be up in a series or is performing better in this series?
Yeah, in theory, you could expect the Oilers would, but you're a basketball guy, right? And when you watch a basketball game, because it's such a skill-driven sport, I'm not a big basketball guy. I enjoy the sport, obviously, but it's such a skill-driven sport that I think, when you look at a game, you can take things away from a game and say, that this is a repeatable thing. This team did something that they do every night in and out, and they'll do that tomorrow night. Hockey isn't quite like that. That's why I'm going to put more stock into it. The Oilers, they have a 30-19 advantage in high danger Corsi 4, but I based on the regular season numbers and based on the expected goals that the Blackhawks generated, I'd expect them to kind of be evenly matched in this series. So going forward, even though the Oilers have had an edge, I'd expect that to even out here.
So let's go to another series. And so both the series we just talked about, by the way, all right, we're talking about teams that trail in the series but have the edge in terms of the Corsi 4 percentage. The Nashville-Phoenix series is pretty – or I guess they're Arizona now. The Nashville-Arizona series has been pretty surprising to me because there's so many statistics that are in, it seems, Nashville's favor. If we're talking about, like, the Corsi 4 at this point right now, pretty good edge, 56.93-43. I have a bet on the Coyotes, but every game I'm watching, Andy, I feel like, man, like, they're kind of up against it almost every time. So can you explain how Nashville in this series has such an edge, it seems statistically, but is now trailing the Coyotes and facing elimination?
Yeah, you're right. I actually just got the only time that I was involved in this series was game three. I was on the Coyotes, and I definitely felt lucky to win that bet. I mean, they were outshot, I think, 8-0 before they scored on their first shot of the game in game three. So that's hockey, right? It kind of doesn't matter what happened after, before that. It's a new game in and of itself. And once a team gets up or by a couple of goals, whether they deserve to or not, that really changes the dynamic of the game. The team with the lead will sit back and try to defend that. And therefore, a team like Nashville, if they're down early and they're losing, 2-0 or 3-0 or something, whether or not they deserve to be is kind of irrelevant. They're going to push and push and push. And at the end of the game, their stats are going to look a little bit better because of that, because the Coyotes have been trying to play more of a defensive posture instead of going for that extra goal. But yeah, no, the Predators have got down early in a few of these games, and that's led to them to be the better team in terms of shot attempt differential, although they were the better team in the regular season. They did have the edge in terms of, you know, I think they were about a 3 percentage points higher in terms of the Coyotes and Predators Corsi 4 percentage at 5-on-5. However, if you look at expected goals 4 percentage, I think the teams were very a little bit closer, which, you know, kind of points to the fact that the Coyotes tend to generate a little bit higher quality of chances on the regular, whereas the Predators will look to get the big booming shots from Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi at the points that, while they might look pretty good, they're not as dangerous as some of those chances in close.
All right, so let's talk about this. And when I was putting my notes together for you last night, I was amazed by this series and some of the numbers. So we'll talk about the Minnesota series. So Minnesota, and we're going to bring in expected goals four in this one. Minnesota 53.42 in terms of the lead in the Corsi 4 percentage, 24-18 in even strength high danger chances, and a 4.37 on the expected goals four. How in the world is this team facing elimination at this point when it looks like all of these numbers are overwhelmingly in favor of the Wild?
Yeah, you're right. The Wild, they in game one, they played a really a textbook Minnesota Wild game. I believe they had like a 70% expected goals for in that one. However, going forward, we've seen this, the Canucks make some adjustments, and obviously that's translated to two wins here. But if you look, the Vancouver Canucks expected goals for percentage, and I'm just looking at Evolving Hockey here, a great modern stats website. Natural Stat Trick is another one. But Evolving Hockey has the Canucks at a 29, roughly 30% expected goals for percentage in game one. And in the following games, they were closer to about 53%. So they were actually the team that was above water in the following two games. It's just, if you look at the series as a whole, that first game really drags it down. But those two games, they show that the Canucks team was able to make the necessary adjustments, and it doesn't hurt that Minnesota went, I think, 0-for-13 on the power play in the last two games. So that probably helps them out. But that team, the Canucks, they have the better high end talent: Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Boeser. Then you have Jacob Markstrom. The Wild just don't have a good goaltending tandem. I know Alex Stalock has looked pretty good in this series, and he's been getting a lot of praise. But I mean, throughout the regular season and prior to that, you know, we're looking at this Minnesota Wild team as having the worst goaltending tandem in the playoffs. And it was kind of, you know, if they were to play break even hockey with the Canucks, where they're just going to trade chances back and forth, that's where they're going to get into trouble, because this Canucks team will beat them, I think, with their skill and with their elite goaltending that they have in Jacob Markstrom.
All right, one more just general question then. So we're seeing, you know, the round robins play out, right? Obviously, these teams just playing for seeding. No danger of elimination. Obviously, I think there's some sense of maybe some relaxation there. Like, if you lose a game, it sucks. But at the same time, obviously, no danger of going home. So I'm curious, how should bettors read into some of the statistics and numbers coming out of these round robin games in these teams? How do you read them going forward when, the motivation really isn't there entirely, because you can't set up matchups, you're not going to get eliminated. And we've seen some lackadaisical performances early, specifically a team like the Knights, who have gotten into early holes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think take it with a grain of salt. Like you said, it's a bit of a kind of a weird situation here, where there is the seeding at stake. But I mean, it's not really a big thing for a lot of teams. I don't think they see it as a huge advantage. So they're going to, you know, there's been situations where teams have kept players that are injured out of the lineup a little longer than they probably would have if it was a playoff scenario and they were in a best of five series like Stamkos. I mean, if the Lightning were in an elimination situation, I think they'd probably be trying to get him back into the lineup a little sooner. But yeah, it's tough. I think, you know, it's they're worth monitoring as far as the statistics go on a game to game basis. But once again, you know, for example, the Knights and the Golden Knight, the Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. I thought the Dallas Stars were basically the weakest team out of the eight teams, mm-hmm. actually in the round robin format. And so to see like the Colorado Avalanche just dominate them without their top defenseman, Klingberg, it's really not that surprising. And once again, I think it's, you know, trust your projections. If you've gone into this return to play format and you've done your homework and you think you've got these teams rated in a pretty good spot, I wouldn't throw everything out after a couple of days or even after the qualifying round. I'd trust your numbers and I'd continue to plug on and there's going to be some teams that just don't seem to add up to what you expect them to, and that's where the adjustments will come in later on. But I think if you're confident in your numbers like I am, it's just important to trust yourself and try not to get too excited with this game. If there's any one sport that can kind of fool you into thinking that you've seen something that you probably didn't, it's this one. I've watched it for 25 plus years, and I would never rely on my eye test to help me make betting decisions.
Andy McNeil, author of our hockey betting guide. I shouldn't even say our, it's his. He did a great job. It is free, but it's worth much more than that. Check it out, VSiN.com/free. Andy, thanks for this time, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Like to do it again for sure.
Yep, of course. Andy McNeil again. Check that out, VSiN.com/free. Sign up for a free email and you get the hockey guide. 25 pages, a lot of key information in there. Best part about it is, too, you can continue to use it as you move forward with your hockey handicap because there's a lot of good stuff that you can learn from there and apply to the future. All right, rest of the show, we got a little bit of basketball. When we come back, though, we're going to talk a little bit about the National Football League. Check in with the Cleveland Browns. We're going to hear from our boys on the Lombardi line. As we talk about the additions that Cleveland has made, we kind of got into it in our team preview, but we get more information, of course, from a guy like Michael Lombardi, who does a great job diving into that. And full slate of basketball today and tomorrow. We'll try to get into that as we also update win totals in the bubble. We got three teams that have cashed their win totals. We'll tell you who they are. All right, and you know that sound. I'm sure you know that sound. It's Friday, which means it's time for the clip of the week, the 5 minutes of our week in which we totally cash in and play a clip for you from the earlier week of shows. Michael Lombardi on the Lombardi line. But we glean information from these clips. These are important. Michael Lombardi, of course, host of, I don't know if you know this, the Lombardi line, with Patrick Maher from time to time. Danny's been filling in a little bit here and there. Talked about the Cleveland Browns, the additions that the Cleveland Browns have made offensively. I like this Cleveland Browns team. I think they have a very high upside if everything goes well for them this season. You need that a little bit in terms of sports and betting and football in general. You need some luck. But I think they have a high ceiling. And I think that like division winner is potential if everything was right for them. But let's hear about the Browns, Lombardi, the additions that we have seen for the Cleveland Browns offense. Take it away.
We'll go to the Browns, where Austin Hooper apparently has spent 2 to 3 weeks in Austin, Texas at Baker Mayfield's house. Really just been working out together there. We already talked about Njoku saying that he's going to stick it out this season and play with the Browns. We talked about that last week. Big expectations for Austin Hooper this year, Michael. When you hear stuff like this coming out of the woodworking, saying that they're meshing well together, taking all this time to really practice together, how does that make you feel as a part of the team, whether it's a fan, a coach, whatever it is? Is that something you love to see from your players, and how do you think that's going to bode over the course of the season?
Well, I mean, I think it's great that they do it, but I mean, it has no impact on the season whatsoever. I mean, when we're in November, we never talk about the offseason throwing the football in Austin, Texas. I mean, it's just something that the media tends to spread. It's the noise. It's really not the signal. You know, the function of the Browns, where you're going to really need to evaluate the Browns, is how they've changed their offense. And I think with Hooper and Ndika, they need to be in 12 personnel quite a bit. So if they're in that 12 personnel, that means Baker Mayfield's under center, and they're utilizing Nick Chubb. They're utilizing, Kareem Hunt in their run game, and they're taking some of the pressure off this offensive line. I mean, this offensive line is going to start Jedrick Willis at left tackle, rookie. They're going to start Jake Conklin over at right tackle, who they paid a lot of money for this offseason. And can Conklin pass protect? He's more of a run run, play action, pass, right tackle, which is what he did in Tennessee. The questions for Cleveland, and I think they could really be emerge as an offense if Stefanski runs that Gary Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan style hard play action and utilize the skill players and take some of the pressure off the offensive line. I think they can be really successful.
Cool. So it always feels good when somebody smarter than you echoes kind of the same thoughts that you had when you were talking about the certain subject. And that was with the Cleveland Browns. Like, I think the upside's very high with this team. We talked and focused a lot when we had our preview about the offensive line, the potential that was there for this offense if they run everything through this running game. Remember, again, I'll remind you one more time, Nick Chubb was the league's leading rusher heading into the final game of the season before Derrick Henry went nuts over that six-game stretch. But he took that from Chubb last year in the final game of the year. So you have a kid in that backfield who could potentially lead the league in rushing. You have an offense line which last year put up great run blocking metrics, then added a very good run blocking tackle in Conklin. Like, a lot of it, as Michael said, if you take the pressure off the offensive line and run more in terms of play action and opposing defenses not giving them something to latch onto, be able to pin your ears back and go after a quarterback who's smaller in stature but still has, I think, a very good skill set in Baker Mayfield, this offense can be very, very solid next year. And so you're looking around at a team in terms of the numbers that are available at the board, right? We're talking about a Cleveland Browns team, small plus price to make the playoffs. Yes, plus 128. I'm getting plus money on a team that I think has high upside and an expanded playoff field. That's something I like for a Cleveland Browns type of team, right? You're looking at division winner. Yeah, 5-1, it might be a tough pill to swallow. But if we're talking about, do you think Cleveland Browns and an expanded postseason field are a playoff team? I would say yes. And if I'm getting, yes, plus 130 on a team like this, I'm totally down. And here's it, and this is just more anecdotal than everything, but it seems to be kind of along the lines of what we see almost every single year. We seem to be a year early on teams that are young and on the upswing, right? In terms of being able to take that next step. And I really do think that the Cleveland Browns in general are that team that last year maybe a little too high on, a little too early, but this year now have a lot of pieces that moving forward could be very successful. All right. We got a lot of show, but a reminder that sports are back full swing as well. It's the time to subscribe to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're offering our best price of 2020 on short and long-term packages. We even offer a free trial if you still aren't sure which option is best for you. Take advantage of this offer before the price goes up for football season. Subscribe today. Put the VSiN experts to work for you with daily email updates that include our best bets from every show, host, and guest. 24/7 video access, points spread weekly, annual NFL betting guide, and more. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today. Get in on this special offer before it expires. All right, hoops on the other side. Take a look at win totals. A brief look back at last night. There's two games I wanted to focus on and talk about really quickly before we move on to today. We'll also update, by the way, because I know it's going down, but we'll update the leaderboard, of course, and the hockey game that is going on, too, as we are live, because I don't know if you know this. I just said it. Sports are back, and they're back like all bleeping day. So we even got basketball underway. We'll update everything going on and look ahead to tomorrow and today. Big F. Make sure you're ready for the action. Sign up for First Bet, a new betting and handicapping product from ExpressBet. Use promo code VEGAS500. Get a $10 free bet as soon as you sign up, plus receive up to a $500 bonus. Stumbled through that one, huh? For wagering in your first 30 days, visit first.com/BET for more information. 1st.com/BET. Again, first.com/bet. Promo code VEGAS500. Let's see. Jacob, I know that I said I was going to do a couple of things in this spot. Can we go back to last night first very quickly? Is that possible for the crew? All right. I know the crew downstairs does a wonderful job, and they can hear my voice. So I wanted to start with Portland and Denver. Most wonderful crew downstairs from last night, if we could. So Portland gets another win, 123-115 last night. They're about a 4, 4.5-point favorite. A very interesting game for many aspects. 125-115. I don't know if I said the final score, but that was your final score in this contest. So I wanted to take a look at this from multiple perspectives because, first off, the Blazers, of course, have become a very don't want to call them public, but their rating has really increased since the start of the seeding games to where it's at right now. ER, of course, we played the clip in the breaks, has put them on the same level and same plane as teams like the Nuggets now that they're at full strength, the Blazers, which is completely understandable that their rating would improve considering the team has gotten better, especially offensively. Wanted to point this out, and here was my sticking point with Portland when I bet the Nuggets yesterday. And it's one of those things where I'm going to stubbornly say, like, I feel like I was right and it was playing out for me, but obviously things out of your control happen, which is last night the Denver Nuggets, with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, take out Nikola Jokic, Jeremy Grant, the rest of the starters that were barely playing already, go into the fourth quarter with their backup guys, right? And even Mike Woltz did a great job, and he quoted in a quote afterwards saying that, you know, had all of our B's in, fighting a team that's fighting for their playoff lives and really going at them. Nuggets at one point even took a lead in the fourth quarter with their backups in against the Portland Trailblazers. And this has been my issue with Portland all along, because their offense has been absolutely spectacular. And even again last night, offensive rating of 133.7 and non-garbage time minutes. Absolutely incredible what this offense did against the Denver Nuggets. And the Denver Nuggets have their issues defensively. And here's my thing. When you got essentially a full quarter and a little bit more, and a good chunk of the third quarter against a backup squad, you shouldn't be fighting tooth and nail to get this game from them. And that's exactly what they did. And then my biggest issue with the Portland Trailblazers, to put a number next to it, has been and will be their defense. The defense last night, you gave up an offensive rating to the Denver Nuggets of 125 flat. So again, you're going into these shootouts and you're playing phenomenal basketball. But from a long-term standpoint, getting into shootouts and giving up 125 points every 100 possessions on a consistent basis night to night is not a way in which you, I guess, for lack of a better term, make noise in the postseason. So this team could very well win their way into the eighth seed. I find myself being very hesitant and buying into the fact that they would push the Los Angeles Lakers to like seven games, which seems to be maybe the thought process that is out there at this point right now. The defense needs to get better. That would be my thought process up to this point. Do I have somebody making goofy faces behind me? Look at this. Look at these guys. Huh? Zoom in on them. all right. I'm trying to be serious, break down numbers here. All right? Can we be professionals for like 2 seconds? And they're like perfectly on both of my shoulders. Look at this. Look at this. Yeah, that's right. Walk away. Walk away. All right. So we're talking about last night. And one more game from last night that I wanted to discuss. Sacramento and New Orleans. Because the issue had been with New Orleans, if you'd been paying attention to the first few games of the seeding contest, was that New Orleans offensively was nowhere to be found. They're actually the third worst offensive rating in the NBA going into their game against Sacramento last night. And then you thought, and I even wrote this down, I wrote this in the notes yesterday, was that could you potentially see New Orleans offense finally wake up against a Kings defense that has been terrible? And they did. New Orleans last night put up their best individual game offensive rating in the bubble up to this point, 123.2 points per 100 possessions, right? The issue is that their defense, which I still had some question marks about because the teams that they had took on in the bubble outside of the Clippers had been struggling offensively, but their defensive rating had been one of the better ones in the NBA bubble going into last night. But as we kind of alluded to yesterday, maybe a little fraudulent considering the offenses you took on, and that really showed. So you finally last night, you finally got the Pelicans, right, to come out of their shell offensively, and that defense showed and reared its ugly head, and the Kings finally exploded offensively for a 140-125 win. And I'll point this out when we talk about the Pelicans overall. And Jacob, we talked about this on Hardwood Handicappers in the podcast at the beginning of the week, and it was the fact that I had circled this and wrote about it for the post and everything, that this was going to be potentially a spot to play against New Orleans because of what we had seen. They had finally covered. Maybe the rating was getting a little out of whack, taking on a Sacramento Kings team that hadn't played well. But we know that this Pelicans team isn't that much farther ahead of the Sacramento Kings. And even before the bubble started, right? I had pointed it out here in a follow the money that these Kings games are not the easy games that you expect them to be for a team like the Pelicans. And sure enough, they lose outright. But my issue was, I thought this number was going to get higher. I thought the public's really going to come in on New Orleans and drive this up to like 5.5, 6, ultimately closes a half point higher. But the number didn't get to the point where I wanted it to. But the lesson is still the same, that the betting market as a whole had overrated this Pelicans team a little bit going into this bubble. And now the results are out there for New Orleans, and we're starting to see it as they're continuing to slide down the standings in the race for the final seed in the Western Conference. All right, games underway right now in the NBA. Spurs have a 36-27 lead, 11:24 left to go in the second quarter. A reminder that the Utah Jazz did not play Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, or Royce O'Neal. So really, really playing with the B's and C's against the San Antonio team, trying to fight their way through this one and maybe qualify for the play-in game. And then in the qualifying round series, Islanders and Panthers. Panthers trying to avoid elimination. They're up against it, up 3-1 right now, 4:19 and change left to go in the second period as the Islanders are up on top 3-1. Let's go to the win totals thing. We'll save the games for the other side. Because Ben Fox, the newest addition, of course, to the VSiN family, put together an article for you in terms of tracking some of the NBA seeding game win totals. We do have some ones that have already cashed, as we know about. The Phoenix Suns, by the way, off to that 4-0 start of the bubble, well over their win total, have cashed. They are all done. So if you bet over on the win total for the Phoenix Suns, you are good to go. 2.5, already 4 wins in the books for Phoenix. 3 unders have cashed already in the NBA bubble at this point. Milwaukee Bucks bet up from 5.5 to 6.5, 2-2, under cashes. Pelicans bet up to 5.5 from 4.5, 1-3, under cashes. And the Los Angeles Lakers 5-5 with theirs. That one had not been bet up from a full win perspective, but you did see a real big move in the juice. 2-3 now in the bubble, under 5.5 cashes. So now we're looking at a couple of these, of course, waiting for them, on the precipice of them cashing in terms of overs, unders, things of that nature. One of them that's really on the verge, the Dallas Mavericks are kind of up against it. Dallas Mavericks win total 4.5 in the bubble. They're sitting at 1-3 at this point right now. Toronto Raptors on the verge of cashing their over as well. Need a couple more wins, but they were sitting at 4.5, sitting at 3-0 thus far in the bubble as it stands right now. Denver Nuggets as well. Denver Nuggets were interesting because Denver Nuggets actually can bet down on their win total from 4.5 to 3.5, and yet still right now sitting at 2-2, 3.5 in terms of their win total. Plenty of opportunity to win this one outright. Memphis Grizzlies 0-4, win total 3.5 on the verge of cashing that under as well. All right, when we come back, we'll take a look at some of the other games tonight. Some very, very fascinating spots for certain teams. We'll update the lines. They weren't many because there's a lot of injuries and names that could be missing, but we'll give you as much information as possible before we wrap it up and head off into the weekend. I know you're enjoying the return of sports as much as we are, so I know you're going to like what BetRivers Sportsbook has for you all this week. BetRivers live streaming 2 pro hockey games every day at BetRivers Sportsbook. If you haven't tried live betting with hockey yet, now's your chance to both bet on and watch the game on your phone. Blackout restrictions apply. Tonight, you can live stream 2 full NHL games. Go to BetRivers, get in on the action. Remember, a $250 match bonus awaits you on your first deposit, and all bonuses or a one-time playthrough. No faster way to turn your bonus cash into real cash. Visit the BetRivers Sportsbook today. You got to be 21. Playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Or in Colorado, call 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right, so the scoring is really picked up in this Jazz-Spurs game. But let's talk about some games that are going on later today in the NBA bubble. Start with this Memphis contest, because Memphis has been, I would say, for lack of a better term, disappointing. Now, what's interesting about Memphis is that they're not really far off from some of their like season-long numbers and the Memphis team that we had really watched throughout the regular season. Their offense has dropped off a little bit. Average offensive possession, 1.066 points every 100, or excuse me, 1.066 every possession, 2.2 points lower than their season-long average up to this point. So the offense has got a little worse. Interesting, though, that statistically their shooting has actually gotten a little bit better in terms of their three-point shooting. But overall, offensively, they've struggled. Now you get Oklahoma City taking on this Memphis team that has struggled offensively. Oklahoma City, who has one of the better defensive ratings in the NBA's bubble up to this point, still allowing less than a point per possession right now in Orlando. OKC minus 3, 224.5 at the open. OKC now minus 4 with a total of 220.5. Not surprising that this total's dropped. Completely would agree with it. Now no value on betting this under considering it's 4 points lower than the open. But this is not a game in which it's going to be running up and down the floor like the Grizzlies want to. The Thunder will be able to slow them down, play some really solid defense against Memphis. Yes, we know that Dennis Schroeder is not going to play for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Terrence Ferguson's out as well. But this is a team that matches up relatively well with what the Memphis Grizzlies want to do. And here's the other thing. Memphis Grizzlies defensively, of course, we know, prioritize defending the rim. Oklahoma City, a team that prioritizes using the mid-range for their scoring. And you see in a lot of the key players that they have, like a Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder when he was there, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. This will be an interesting battle down low, as Steven Adams has looked very good, I think, in the bubble up to this point. But outside of everything, Oklahoma City minus three seemed low, minus four seems right on, and we can understand that this total now at 221 or 220 and a half, where it's been up to this point. A clean injury report for the most part, by the way, for the Grizzlies. Tyus Jones is the name that has popped up. All right, let's go to, let's see, Sacramento, Brooklyn. I'll just note the number really quickly. Sacramento opened up four and a half with a total of 232 and a half. Total still the same, now up to five over Brooklyn. You have to wonder, with a Sacramento team that defensively has been really challenged, and we even noted it when we talked about the game last night, despite breaking out offensively and scoring 140 points, you still gave up 125 points and well over 120 points, over 100 possessions to the New Orleans Pelicans. So your defensive issues haven't been fixed. It's that your offense finally came to play against the New Orleans Pelicans. Can you do that again here against Brooklyn, where this power rating, and again, we talk about this from a game-to-game basis. You know, Sacramento, we're talking about a team that was catching 2.5 against Orlando, 5.5 against Dallas, 4.5 against New Orleans, now all of a sudden thrust into the role of favorite at 5. We get it's the Brooklyn Nets, and at the same time, keep an eye on the injury report. Joe Harris, questionable. Jared Allen, questionable. We know that Crawford's not playing, but I'm always wary when a team flips roles like this into such an extreme, right? It was part of the reason we talked about it last night, Portland Trailblazers, right? You're catching points in your last three matchups, and all of a sudden, boom, just like this, you're a four-point favorite against the Denver Nuggets team. So keep an eye on just how Sacramento performs now thrust into the role of laying points. Let's go to the best game of the night. I find this really fascinating, and maybe Jacob has an opinion on this as well. And maybe there's an injury report that I'm missing out on here or something. Toronto is now down to a 1.5-point favorite over the Boston Celtics. Total sitting at 220 and a half. This opened Toronto minus three with a total of 218 and a half. So numbers gone in Boston's favor. Total has gone up about a point and a half, 2 points, depending on where you shop for your number. But Toronto, of course, this is not an instance where Toronto, right, has nothing to play for, could potentially sit guys in the second half. This is when you get the two seed. You clinch up what you want to do in the postseason. Granted, this is potentially a second-round matchup, so maybe Toronto doesn't want to necessarily show their hand. But we did see yesterday, and again, two separate teams, but a similar situation, in which the Los Angeles Clippers were kind of facing a must-win in the race for the two seed if they wanted to take another step in locking that up, but against an opponent in the Dallas Mavericks who they were going to show their hand and potentially play them in the first round. I'm really surprised that this is down to now 1.5. Given the struggles of the Boston Celtics in the bubble, especially from a defensive standpoint, and on top of that, we know that they have been playing around with Kemba Walker and the minutes restriction. Now down to 1.5. At some point, man, if we're getting down to one, this seems like a opportunity to come in on Toronto here, unless there's an injury that I have not seen. But what do you feel about this matchup? I find it surprising that the market is so much in favor of Boston after what we've seen through the first three or four games in Orlando.
I'm terrified of the Raptors. Like, I want nothing to do with this. I think I'm much more afraid of the Raptors than the Bucks when it comes to matchup with the Celtics. Like, they match up really well. Plus, we have, like, Van Fleet and Lowry might be the second best backcourt in the NBA right now behind McCollum and Dame. Like, I don't like this number at all. I'm terrified of the Raptors.
Hey, break in really quickly, too. We'll continue this analysis, but should note that 3 minutes ago it was announced. Let's see. I just want to confirm this. Zion Williamson not going to play against Washington today. So keep that in mind. Zion Williamson, a no-go for the Pelicans. Second leg of a back-to-back. So maybe you kind of expected that. So back to this. Yeah, I would expect that. Now, I kind of understand from the standpoint of Toronto offensively actually hasn't been that good. It's just been their three-point shooting that's been very good. Their offensive rating's pretty low. At last look, it's like in the range of 105. But the way this team has been playing defensively and the lack of depth that Boston has in terms of their scoring on their bench, like, it does make you think, I think, that you're missing something here, considering, like, I can understand taking three, right? And I can understand in that range, 2.5, whatever it is. Now we're looking at 1.5, like a 1.5 difference. I don't think there's just a point between these two teams on a neutral floor.
Yeah, also, I feel like on face value, you're not afraid of Marc Gasol, but, like, I could see Marc Gasol having a huge game tonight against the Celtics. Like, if Steven, like, going back to what we talked about, like, the Steven Adams game from the scrimmage, like, if Steven Adams could do that, then, like, Marc Gasol, I think, is going to dissect this team.
Yeah, this is really one of those where the market, and we talked with Josh Applebaum on the Lombardi line earlier today, said that the sharp market was in on the Boston Celtics. But you have to wonder at one point it stops, right? Because we talk about this with Jimmy. We talk about this with John Murray all the time, right? The Sharps are in on one side, but they're in on one side at a certain number. And you wonder then how much then steam just starts to come in and you see this number move and steam chasers start to pile on and get in on the Boston Celtics. Because you would expect taking three again makes sense. But if you're continuously taking like 2.5, 2, these bad numbers, like, I don't know. The power rating seems a little off here at this point. Because remember, in a neutral, like, we're getting the basic power rating. This should be what you expect between these two teams. Now, having said that, I will say when we did our initial market power ratings, which I have to update still, the Raptors were only 1 point ahead of Boston in those initial market power ratings. So I can, again, understand taking some points. But to continue to drive this down to, I don't know, do we get to one? As it stands right now, we still have a long way to go until tip-off later tonight.
Yeah, if it got the one, I might have to emotional hedge it.
Just have some money on the back end when your team ultimately gets destroyed. Very happy about that. All right, let's move on really quickly. Two more games to talk about. Update the numbers again. So we talked about this. As it stands right now, New Orleans an 8-point favorite. Total of 236. Zion Williamson is not going to play. Just announced about 3 minutes ago. We'll see what the update is going to be on the number or adjustment, if any. I would assume he is worth something in certain spots against a bad team like the Wizards. How much could he possibly be worth? Maybe, I don't want to say next to nothing, but maybe worth a half point there that Zion Williamson is not going to be on the floor for the New Orleans Pelicans against the Washington Wizards. No real interest there. Real interest, though, in watching what's going to happen between Orlando and Philadelphia. Philly right now land 5, total of 223 against the Orlando Magic. Opened up 4.5 with a total of 222.5, so half point moves on both the side in total. Injury report here, Aaron Gordon, hamstring, doubtful. Michael Carter-Williams, foot issue, questionable. We know that Jonathan Isaac done for the year with a knee injury. Philadelphia 76ers won't have Ben Simmons. He's going to be out with a knee issue. Mike Scott's still out with that knee issue. And then, of course, Glenn Robinson with his hip is questionable. So the question, of course, becomes Ben Simmons not on the floor, how this changes what Philly wants to do offensively in terms of getting out and running in transition, what he does so well, ripping down rebounds, getting out in the fast break, and taking advantage of that regard. Does Philly then slow down the tempo? And I do wonder, like, the Philadelphia defense has been really bad in the Orlando bubble. They're in the bottom 5 in terms of defensive efficiency in the Orlando bubble. Without one of your better, actually, without your best on-ball defender in Ben Simmons, how that changes now, too, considering how bad you've been with him on the floor, and now you have without him, what's going to happen? The thing that worries me here with Orlando is they had built up their offensive rating through, I guess, somewhat fraudulent means when you're taking on the defenses that they were up to a certain point. And then we had mentioned it the other day when you run into a team like the Toronto Raptors, Indiana Pacers get smacked down immediately in a 121-109 type of game. Toronto shut them down as well. So I just wonder when you look at Orlando and what they've done up to this point and you see some of the bubble long numbers, I guess I'll call them, how fraudulent those could potentially be. Anyway, we have a great weekend on tap too. We're not going to get into a lot of the games. Because, of course, we don't have numbers. We didn't have numbers for these games until, like 2 hours ago because of so many issues with injuries and who's going to play and who's not. I'll say this. Big games on deck coming up this weekend. Portland Trailblazers taking on the Los Angeles Clippers is going to be a pretty big one. We'll see if the Clippers can take advantage and continue to shoot the ball extremely well in the bubble. That's been one of the more underrated parts about what the Clippers have done in this bubble. Holy crap, have they been shooting the ball well. 44% from deep in the bubble for the Los Angeles Clippers. And they're a good shooting team. They shot 37%. During the regular season, but the shooting has really caught on for the Los Angeles Clippers. And then you have, of course, the other top games of the slate on Saturday, Jazz and Nuggets, as the Nuggets try to improve their defensive effort. Maybe they'll get some of their trio back that has been sidelined. Lakers trying to turn that offense around against the Pacers. Suns trying to remain undefeated against the Heat, and then the Milwaukee Bucks trying to turn things around offensively against a Dallas Mavericks team that has been insanely inconsistent throughout the NBA bubble. All right, that does it for us here on The Edge. If you missed out on any part of the program throughout the week, vsin.com/podcast is the spot to go. Update really quickly before we get you out of here. 54-45, 3:20 left to go in the second quarter between the Jazz and the San Antonio Spurs, and the Islanders still holding on to that lead over the Florida Panthers as they try to eliminate them and move on into the, I guess, regular postseason, because these are just qualifying rounds. So we'll see if they can do that. Go Coyotes tonight, by the way. Hopefully they can wrap that up. Got him at +115 to wrap that series. Felt better. By the way, Andy McNeil was great today, so check out that as well. What do I got, like 5 seconds left? I'm out of here. Come on, it's the weekend.